And now it's time for another edition of our summer movie series, and this week it's a special memorial edition. Paul Newman died since we last convened, a man whose devastating good looks and charisma might seem destined for stardom, but his first real hit almost wasn't. James Dean agreed to play middleweight champ Rocky Graziano, but after his sudden death, Newman stepped in to star in the 1956 biopic.
Drink it all in one at last, honey. I'm going to be losing his title someday. Sure. I'm going to be losing a punch in his right hand, too. It's got to happen. But it don't make no difference, because what I want, they can't take away from me in no ring. You know, I've been lucky. Somebody up there likes me.
Somebody down here, too.
Oh, that's right, down here. We all liked him. An actor at his best playing characters, trying to become better guys. And even when they failed, we sure liked watching. What's your favorite Paul Newman film? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Here to guide us through the Newman oeuvre is our Talk of the Nation film buff, Murray Horwitz. Nice to have you back, Murray.
It's great to be back, Neil. Thanks.
And even when he was playing a palooka, Paul Newman looked smart.
He looked smart partly because he was smart. I thought you were going to say he looked like Paul Newman. And he was, let's just say, hands down, one of the most phenomenally gorgeous people of either gender that ever appeared on the screen.
On the planet, I think.
On the planet, it's true. Full disclosure here. If you went to Kenyon College, Paul Newman was a part of your life, and I did. Paul Newman graduated in 1949. And he grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. And if he had become an insurance agent and had not been Paul Newman, which is, of course, ridiculous to contemplate, and you were walking down Euclid Avenue in Cleveland and had run into him, you would have just gone, oh, my gosh, look at that guy.
He looks taller on the screen.
but you're right in that he always gave off that intelligence, too. And that's something that not every actor, even if they're very intelligent, is able to do.
Look, for example, at a movie called Slapshot, which is a really, you know, on some level, a really dumb sports movie. Just listen to this clip. The Hanson brothers are assigned to the team. Paul Newman, of course, plays the player coach,
right.
And listen to this conversation.
Oh, you cheap son of a bitch. Are you crazy? Those guys are retards.
I got a good deal on those boys. The scout said they showed a lot of promise.
They brought their f***ing toys with them.
Well, I'd rather have them playing with their toys than playing with themselves.
They're too dumb to play with themselves.
By the way, we could say it's a dumb sports movie. I like that movie
for
all its flaws.
Movie.
And it always ends up in everybody's top 10 or top 5 sports movies of all time.
Here's an email from Bob. One of my favorites is The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean. Not a great work of art, but fun. Supposedly it was one that Paul liked as well. As much as I enjoyed Newman's films, my favorite place to watch him was at the racetrack. And, of course, he was a great driver.
He was a great driver. And I guess we should, a couple of answers to the email. The first is, I agree with you about Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean. And there are a couple of, you know, let's say seriously flawed motion pictures that Newman liked. Another one was Robert Altman's Buffalo Bill and the Indians, mm-hmm. where he gives this great portrayal, even if the movie's not first rate. And he, by the way, the actor John Considine, who was a friend of his, said that Newman liked that experience well. He loved the ensemble feel. And it's another secret about him, to use another sports comparison. He was a little bit like the great center Bill Russell in that he was a star, but he was a star because he understood it was a team game, and he loved an ensemble.
Just to go through another obscure Western, The Left-Handed Gun, where he plays Billy the Kid. Not a great piece of art, but boy, he's good in it.
No, but he came along at a time when the studio system, exactly at the moment, the studio system had been broken up by the Supreme Court in 1954. And as a result, he had to be lucky and judicious in his choices of collaborators. And that's a movie that, had a script, was based on a play by Gore Vidal. I'm trying to remember, was it Robert Wise? Who directed Left-Handed Gun?
I think it was Robert Wise. Yeah.
And so he had good collaborators, and he was never uninteresting on the screen, it had nothing to do with his handsomeness. In fact, the handsomeness sometimes got in the way, but he was always interesting and always letting you know he was thinking.
Let's go to Lisa. Lisa with us on the line from San Antonio.
Hi.
Hi.
My favorite is The Young Philadelphians.
And why that picture in particular?
He's so righteous, and he does comedic work so well in that movie, even without saying anything. He's got a great scene with the chihuahua. You've seen the movie.
I have seen the movie. It's been a while, and he's a young man in that picture.
He's extremely young. You can't even see his blue eyes, but you just melt. I just melt. I don't know about you.
Melting is... I'm much too reserved for that sort of thing, young lady. Murray?
It's a 1959 film. It is right at the beginning of his career. And again, it shows his intelligence that you were mentioning, as well as his gorgeousness, as Lisa was mentioning. The blue eyes, by the way, are something he didn't really know about firsthand. He was colorblind. And so he never knew about it. In fact, he was once asked...
So he played with Elizabeth Taylor. He says, I love those gray eyes.
He was asked to write his own epitaph once, and he said, here lies Paul Newman, who died a failure because his eyes turned brown.
Lisa, thank you very much for the phone call. It's interesting she mentions that he played all kinds of accents, all kinds of regionalities. Listen to one of his great summer roles in The Long Hot Summer, where, by the way, you can also sense some of that chemistry that we were just hearing about from Lisa between Newman and his wife, actress Joanne Woodward.
I bet you was a mighty appealing little girl. I bet your hair hung in a tangle down your back. I bet you knew where to look for robin's eggs and blackberries. I'll bet you had a doll with no head on it.
There's a church bazaar coming up next week.
Now you wear a white dress and a ribbon in your hair and I'll waltz you around under the moon.
Oh, boy, somebody could write.
they don't make them like that anymore. And you're right about his judicious use of accents and character. He was a good character actor in a way. The other thing, that is the movie in which he met his second wife, Joanne Woodward, and that gives us the occasion to talk about something. You talked about the race car driver. We need to talk about Newman, the non-actor, because he was as accomplished a human being as any big Hollywood star, number one box office attraction had ever been. It's amazing. He was a political activist. He was his sauces and snacks. You know, The Economist wrote his obituary, and they said that his charity turned him into the most generous individual relative to his income in the 20th century history of the United States. And, you know, he marched with Dr. King. He was a delegate for Eugene McCarthy. He was a delegate to the United Nations. He was quite something.
As long as we're on the Southern accents, let's go directly to Tennessee Williams. Here he is in the famous adaptation of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof with Elizabeth Taylor.
Just ride the brick, for heaven's sake.
No.
You've got to.
I don't have to do anything. I don't want to. Well, you keep forgetting the conditions on which I agreed to stay on living with you.
I'm not living with you. We occupy the same cage, that's all.
Oh, that's good stuff.
That's good stuff. And Burl Ives is Big Daddy. Mm-hmm. He returned to Tennessee Williams. One of the things that we will probably won't hear today from our listeners is Newman as a director, but he was an extraordinary director. He directed about five pictures. Three of them were nominated for Oscars. One was The Glass Menagerie, starring Joanne Woodward, and that was nominated for the Golden Palm at the Cannes Film Festival. He was a terrific director. Didn't do much, but what was there was Cherse.
Let's go to Anne. Anne with us from Jacksonville.
Well, yeah, I was just going to vote for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. That movie, I've seen it several times now, and every time I watch it, the chemistry between them just gets to me. And at the end, that last line when he tells her to lock the door and you know it's coming, but you know you're not going to see it. I still blush. I love it. And
there's a phrase we don't use much anymore, and animal magnetism.
Yeah, it definitely applies between those two in that scene.
Oh, that's it's such a great picture, and I see it in color. You know, I see that picture in color.
It's true.
Well, I actually saw it in color.
Oh, I saw it in black. Like the Late Late Show Part Two,
right.
You know,
so. And then on it. In his later years, kind of a sentimental favorite of mine is Nobody's Fool. I have to bring that one in.
I am so glad you mentioned Nobody's Fool, and I'm so glad you mentioned his later years, because his later work really is extraordinary. It's fabulous. I think he's the only actor to have been awarded by the Academy an Oscar for Lifetime Achievement, which is kind of a runner-up prize because he never really won one. And then he won the Best Actor Oscar after that for The Color of Money.
Which was, say, we should have given it to you last time.
Right, exactly.
Well,
so.
Anyway, there is, of course, the picture that I think a lot of people will remember is Cool Hand Luca, the prison movie, another Southern accent. But this is a showcase for Newman. Here he is. We're going to play two clips from this. But here he is first, placing a bet.
I can eat 50 eggs.
Nobody can eat 50 eggs.
You just said he could eat anything.
You ever eat 50 eggs?
Nobody ever eat 50 eggs.
And one of those voices, of course, the great George Kennedy, who won an Oscar for his performance as Dragline, and he later goes back to whisper and question the cool hand Luke's bravado.
Couldn't you say 35 or 39?
That seemed a nice round number.
Luke, that's money you're talking about. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, well, it'd be something to do.
It gives me something to do.
And then, of course, George Kennedy had said, my boy Luke says he can eat 50 eggs. He can eat 50 eggs.
Yes, absolutely.
He won't tell you what happens.
Oh, that's such a great picture. We're talking with Murray Horowitz, of course, our movie maven here on Talk of the Nation. As you look at new... Well, let me read some... enough for me. Let me read some emails. This is from Lois in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I was 20 and went to the Road Atlanta car race with a friend. We were in the... Kribari Brothers tent across from the Budweiser tent. They sent me over to Paul Newman's trailer with a bottle of Asti Spumante. He gave me a cold Budweiser and opened the wine. We sat and talked very ordinarily. I told him what I was taking in school and then asked, so Paul, what do you do? I race cars. He didn't miss a beat. And let's see, there's this other one I wanted to read. This is from about 35 years ago. This is from Ramin. About 35 years ago, I went to see Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And in Tehran, Iran, I did not know anything about the movie. I was 15 years old, and I fell in love with the movie and the characters. In the weeks following that day, I went back 6 more times to see that movie again. Even today, if I catch it on TV, I will stop whatever I'm doing and watch the whole thing. This movie makes me feel like a 15-year-old again. Of course, this one of his partnerships with Robert Redford, and here he is in Butch Cassidy in the Sundance Kid.
Maybe there's a way to make a profit in this. Bet on Logan.
I would, but who'd bet on you?
Sundance. When we're done, if he's dead, you're welcome to stay.
Listen, I don't mean to be a sore loser, but when it's done, if I'm dead, kill him.
We're talking about Paul Newman movies today on the Summer Movie Festival on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I can't tell you whether that's my favorite of the collaboration or The Sting. I love them both.
The Sting is so good. They were having a great time, and you could tell that they were having a great time while they were staying in character. I mean, it was just there's a genre that we talk about as buddy movies, and these are sort of beyond buddy movies. There's something that those two guys had together that was just enormously attractive. No matter if you're a man, a woman, young, old, these guys were great together.
Let's see. We go next to Jerry. Jerry with us from Wausau in Wisconsin.
Yes, my favorite movie, it's not one of the best ones, but is The Hombre, and the reason I like that is that in January of 66, I moved down to teach at the University of Arizona in Tucson, and I lived in a big apartment building. It was new, and there was overbuilding in Tucson, and the movie crew came in and occupied the whole 2 top floors of this 18-story building. That was from makeup people on through the director to Newman and that. And it turns out that I'm sitting in the men's sauna in the morning, and I was one of the only person to go down early in the morning. And the door opens up, and in walks buck naked Paul Newman. And so for the next 4 months while they made the movie, about 3 to 4 times a week, it was just Paul and I down there, and it was interesting. You know, I, of course, deferred to him. If he wanted to chat, we would chat. Otherwise, he would just kind of say hello and read the paper type of thing. But when you were talking about his human side, one of the things that struck me is that Tucson was overbuilt, and our developer and manager, Ray Schiff, a great fellow, was up against it in a way, close to receivership. And Newman told me one day he was very indignant. On that previous Saturday, a tenant had a birthday party for his son there, and they had kids over and used the swimming pool.
And Jerry, if you could wrap it up.
What happened is that a tenant raised a fuss because one of the kids was Hispanic, and he said he wasn't paying that kind of rent to swim with wetbacks, and Newman was indignant, and he said that damn Numo Rish Texan. He was very impressed by the fact that Ray Schiff, the manager, said to the fellow, if you don't like living here and who you're swimming with, just go up and get your lease bring it down and I'll tear it up. And Newman was extremely impressed by that. And okay. That's kind of my picture. I know it wasn't the greatest picture, but that's my picture of Paul Newman.
Jerry, thanks for the story. We appreciate it. What a Way to Go, writes Sheldon in North Little Rock, Arizona, a 1964 ensemble movie. I enjoyed it because in Paul Newman's comedic role playing a painter, taxi driver in Paris, a very good French accent, by the way, he looked like he was truly enjoying himself on screen. And I would have to say that, my favorite of all his roles, Fast Eddie.
Anything can be great. I don't care if bricklaying can be great if a guy knows. If he knows what he's doing and why, and if he can make it come off. And while I'm going, I mean, while I'm really going, I feel like a jockey must feel. He's sitting on his horse, he's got all that speed and that power underneath him. He's coming into the stretch, the pressure's on him, and he knows. He just feels when to let it go and how much.
And he should have won for that one. He did win later for The Color of Money in the same part much later. But Murray, your favorite of all of Paul Newman's movies.
Well, you know, there's so many. We didn't mention Hud, and we didn't mention Torn Curtain. He worked with great directors. He worked with Hitchcock, Scorsese. But my favorite has got to be the latest, one of the latest, Nobody's Fool.
And let's listen to a clip from that.
Do you still bet on that horse race of yours?
What, the trifecta?
Yes. Has it ever come in?
Not yet.
But you still bet on it?
Well, sure. I mean, the odds have got to kick in sooner or later.
Fine. That's exactly the way I feel about you.
Oh, well, the odds always kicked in on Paul Newman. Murray, as always, thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Neil.
Murray Horowitz, our favorite Talk of the Nation film buff. You can read a few words from Murray about fellow Kenyan college alum Paul Newman and see Newman's college yearbook photos at our blog. That's over at npr.org/blogofthenation. We're going to take a break in the series next week, but the week after that, we'll be back with another edition of the summer movie series. Tomorrow at Science Friday, Ira Flatow will be here with a look back at the Apollo moon missions with a few of the astronauts who flew them and looking ahead how much longer before humans go back to the moon. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.